This is The Daily Circuit. I'm Tom Weber. Now we're going to have a conversation about being addicted to pornography and whether it is an addiction. That's something that's been discussed about recently with a new study. But there's also a man using the pen name Isaac Abel, who's been writing in recent months about he was warped by free and easy access to porn. And at age 23, he says he's struggling with the effects. His own dating and sex life, he feels, is warped. There have been recent research, as I noted, that question that word addiction. But in this age of better than ever internet connectivity, accessing porn has never been easier. What is that doing to a generation of young people? And do researchers even know how to best address the situation? Those are a few of the things we'll discuss this hour with Robert Weiss, a senior VP of clinical development with a treatment center in California called Elements Behavior Health, also author of the upcoming book Closer Together, Further Apart: The Effect of Technology and the Internet on Sex, Intimacy, and Relationships. Good morning, Rob. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Your thoughts and experience and questions are also welcome. Have you thought about how any pornography viewing you've done has affected your own relationships or questions about what to or how to talk to friends or your kids? 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. You can also comment online. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. Rob, I'm curious, the potency of the word addiction. I mean, does it matter if we call it an addiction, or is it really important to have that word or not in how we treat?
It's a great question. Thanks for having me on, by the way. I would say that the American Psychiatric Association would say, no, we don't need the word addiction, because in the DSM-5, which is the Bible of mental health, the word addiction has been taken out for everything, for alcoholism, for drugs, for gambling. It no longer exists in the clinical language. So, we don't use the word addiction officially in any kind of diagnosis. So calling something sex addiction, it would make sense, is probably an old-fashioned way of talking about something.
Is sex addiction and addiction to pornography, even if we don't use the word addiction, are those the same thing?
Well, I don't see, to me, someone who's addicted to pornography, well, let me back up and speak to your languaging. I think that the general public has picked up on the term sex addict or sex addiction, and that seems to be the experience of the people that I work with, is they feel that they're addicted. And so, we can use, as far as the field's concerned, I don't think we are really that attached to addiction, compulsion, hypersexual disorder, hypersexuality, whatever you want to call it. We just want to have a diagnosis where we can, clearly say what this problem is and how to best treat people so that we don't end up morally judging people or giving them bad names for their behavior.
Thoughts on what Isaac Abel has been writing recently? He discusses his own history of watching porn. He's now 23 years old. And he has issues with intimacy.
Well, I think, in answer to your question, there are two different categories. There are a couple of different things going on all at the same time, and it's hard to sort of peel them apart, but I may be able to help in some way. We've always had a population of people who are vulnerable to repeating patterns of pleasurable behavior in order to escape reality, if you will. So whether it's food or gambling or sexual behavior or exercise, there are certain intensely pleasurable experiences that some people will abuse in order to distract, dissociate, make themselves feel better, whatever that is. That there's always been vulnerable people who will turn to behaviors and, of course, substances to escape. But that's just one part of the picture. I think what's more interesting, as interesting, is what's happening related to technology. Because I think we're seeing two different things happening at the same time. I mean, on the one hand, I have the traditional people who would always end up getting hooked on intensity-based sexual experiences. And in our treatment centers, those were the folks we would treat. And I always understood that those were people who found their way to this particular behavior because of their own deficits. They have challenges with intimacy, relationships, trauma in their past, parenting issues. They don't feel entirely safe and comfortable in a close and intimate, honest relationship, but they do feel more comfortable in relationships and situations that they can control. And if you've been abused and you have an abuse history, you want a controllable situation where you're going to feel like bad things can't happen to me again emotionally. And so for those people, seeking prostitutes, affairs, lots of porn, a couple hours a day, and a lot of anonymous sexual contacts, lots and lots of multiple anonymous affairs, all that kind of behavior provides them with a way of getting their emotional needs met and have a sense of control. But we are seeing a game changer in relationship to internet porn, and I think it's maybe a little different than has been described. So I think it's worth talking about more.
Well, and say more about the access as well, because you're talking specifically about a portion of the population that's always had been drawn to this kind of behavior. But the question to be had is whether unprecedented access exposes it to more people who otherwise wouldn't have, and whether they create or kind of get that addiction from there.
Well, it's my belief, and I write about this in Closer Together, which won't be out until the fall, that escalation of addiction has always been driven by technology. I mean, if you look at people chewing coca leaves in the fields to have a little energy to go back out and finish doing what they were doing before they were fine cocaine, you know, how many coca leaves did you chew before you were addicted?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until we refined it, we made it intensely more pleasurable and more accessible to the general public, that we had problems with cocaine addiction. And if you look at compulsive gambling, you know, once we put casinos and Powerball in every state and we started rolling out gambling as a national agenda, we saw more people who had access. You know, it wasn't just going to Vegas or Atlantic City. They had it in their own town, and we see more people with a compulsive gambling problem. So, of course, it makes sense that once you make pornography and sexual access to sexual experiences as easy as pulling your phone out of your pocket, rather than, you know, having to go down to that porn stop in your car and park out back and hope nobody sees you and all of the steps one would have had to take in the past, it's a lot easier to be impulsive. And impulsivity for some people can lead to addiction and compulsivity, just depending on their psychological makeup. So, yeah, the more accessible you make an intensely pleasurable experience or substance, the more likely it is that you're going to have people who are going to run off the rails with it. It's always been that way.
And have we been able then to have the science or have the research that connects the addiction, and that's, again, we were talking about the use of that word, but connect that to what then happens in your intimate relations after, whether your sex life is, as people like Isaac Abel have been writing online,
yes,
you know, are affected. Is that a connected relationship?
Oh, absolutely. We have a fair amount of research that speaks to the fact that if, you know, we take a healthy person and we ask them to, in a test, look at pornography, let's say 3 hours a day for several days a week for a month or so, you know, if you test them on their how they look at relationships, how they look at body parts, how they look at sexuality, and you retest them after they've had this time with the material, you know, a couple of months looking at porn, you'll find that they look at people differently. They look at them more as body parts rather than as a whole. They treat them differently. They tend to be more focused on an objectified relationship rather than an empathic or genuine relationship. So the good news is that for people who look at a lot of porn, and then if you take it away from them and they have no problem having it taken away from them, they will eventually return to, you know, more genuine relationships, more looking people as whole objects. The brain will return to its natural functioning.
And do you take it away the same way you would treat someone who needs, you know, the drugs or the alcohol taken away from
them?
Well,
I think you need to understand sex addiction a little bit, in the sense that, and again, I'm using that term, it could be compulsion, addiction, hypersexuality. We don't have a clinical definition, so it's hard to, you know, give the right name.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this, you know, there are people who find themselves caught up in looking at a lot of porn because it's a fun distraction. You know, maybe they're a little shy around dating, or maybe they have a few personality characteristics that make them feel less comfortable about going out and meeting a real person. And some of those people will find themselves hooked on it because it's just so easy. And it's just so easy to have that intense pleasure. You know, I mean, one of the reasons that I used to date when I was a kid, and I think most teenagers would admit to this, I mean, one of the good things about dating was the possibility you might have a sexual experience. And it drove a lot of kids out of the house. And but you don't have to leave your house to have a sexual experience now. You can have a live one pretty much, you know, watching a real person with machines that will manipulate your genitals, and it'll feel just like the real thing, or even better. The images are constantly changing. They're constantly stimulating. And there are a lot of questions about that. For example, you know, will we have a percentage of the population that will choose porn over real relationships? And to me, that is more of an evolutionary question than merely about addiction. There are some people who will become addicted to porn, just like they become addicted to gambling, and they will seek out the intensity of that as a means to deal with early trauma and abuse. And then we're going to, or other forms of disconnection inside themselves. And that's the best they can do for a relationship. They may still be married or whatever, but that's the best they can do for sustaining their own stability emotionally is all the porn and all the sexual acting out.
We are talking.
But then we're going to have another population, and maybe this is more what the gentleman who's writing about is talking about, mm-hmm. is we're having, you know, I am certainly seeing men come into treatment who have started looking at hardcore porn at 15, and now they're 25, and that's all they've ever done. And while some of their friends may have dated or had relationships or gone out, you know, they haven't. And so they're coming to my treatment center at 25, 26 and saying, hey, I'd like to learn how to date. Hey, I'd like to learn how to relationship. Well, you know, those are tasks we usually take on somewhere around 15, 16, 17 to begin the learning process. But if you're sitting at home looking at porn and anime for, you know, 3 hours a day from 16 to 25, it's a lot harder to then begin to learn how to adapt to relationship-oriented sexuality, which is not nearly as interesting and stimulating in the short term as the online experiences.
Rob Weiss is with us from California today, a senior VP with a treatment center in California called Elements Behavior Health. Also,
actually, I work for the Sexual Recovery Institute and the Ranch and Promises. Elements owns all of those properties.
I see. Author also of the upcoming book, Closer Together, Further Apart. And we're talking about access and addiction, although we've gone over the use of the word addiction to pornography and some recent research there as well. And your questions and comments as well, 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. Steph Curtis on the Daily Circuit page.
Yes, someone who's using the name A Nice Girl in Minneapolis. She says, as the wife of an addict, this has a huge impact on intimacy and relationships. I'd encourage anyone who is addicted or think they might be to get aggressive help quick. Don't hide or mask situations with doctors and mental health professionals. This is devastating emotionally, physically, mentally, and financially. If I had known the depth of my spouse's problems 15 years ago, I'd have moved on and been much safer and happier. I'm eager to hear this story in light of recent news about this issue.
Robert Weiss, to what, you know, the snowball effect,
right,
what you're talking about down the line then when people do get in.
Well, this is a really common story where I have a spouse come into treatment, a spouse will send their husband or wife into treatment and they'll come in saying, you know, my husband or wife just found me realized I've been looking at porn for 8 or 10 years and I have several thousand images and I've been chatting with men or women online and meeting up with them out of town and, you know, I have this huge thing going on that they never knew about and they're in complete shock and they're completely devastated. And this is very typical for the people that we treat in that they often live a double life and which, by the way, feels very addictive, you know, living in secrets, pretending to be someone you're not letting people know about whole parts of your life that relate to behaviors you don't want them to see or know about. I mean, those are all pretty typical of any addiction, is hiding that out of their life. But the spouses are devastated because oftentimes they find out a large amount of information in a short period of time that was kept secret from them for a long time, and they're not expecting that. You know, you just don't expect your spouse to devastate you in that way. And they are often what drives someone to enter treatment, is a very angry or hurt spouse.
Are they devastated because there was the lie and keeping from it, or are they devastated by what it was, the porn?
You know, it's really great that you asked that question. I mean, there's two pieces to that. One is that, you know, someone who's looking at porn a couple of hours a day and masturbating to it, I mean, they're going to have decreased interest in partner sexuality. They're going to have decreased interest in their partner because they're having all their sex with online images. So, I mean, that's perfect sense. So for a lot of times, it's the gradual kind of emotional and sexual disappearance of the person who's doing all the porn. And on the other hand, it's the breaking of trust, as you said. You know, most spouses will say, you know, it isn't that you lied to me. It isn't that you looked at all this. It isn't that you hooked up with people out of town or whatever. It's that I didn't know who you were, you know, that you've had this whole life. And I'm here with kids and family, and, you know, you've been living like everything was fine. And it really is the breaking of trust that, in fact, I would define infidelity in that way these days. Because, you know, if you think about internet infidelity, you know, someone can say, well, I'm not being unfaithful. That person's 3,000 miles away, and I don't know their last name.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at a webcam, so how could I be being unfaithful? Or these are just images, you know. And it's very hard for a spouse to argue when a guy says, hey, this is just what a guy does. You know, my dad looked at Playboy. I look at this. What's the big deal? But really, it is the lying that devastates the spouses. It's the broken trust. It's the betrayal of the relationship that is as deep and more enduring a pain than the fact that the person is being sexual outside the relationship.
Let's take a call here from Kyle, who's on the phone this morning in St. Paul. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning. I just wanted to kind of point out one of the I think the biggest distinction here is between, you know, sexual activity and pornographic stuff is that the sex part is always relational. And I think part of it is to consider the relational aspect, and that someone may be, an example would be if someone believes that their only value is through that sexual contact, it might actually have more to do with the way that they view themselves or trauma that they've experienced. And then both of them are, I think, are very different than regular addiction, because not all of us are born to be dependent on drugs, but we are all born to have sex. And it, lastly, I think in both cases, shame is almost always there. And I think shame drives a lot of any addiction.
Kyle, I'm glad you brought up, especially that last point, Rob, there. As I've noted, there's this guy using the pen name Isaac Abel doing some writing online. And one of the things he notes is that the computer doesn't judge. When he told his girlfriend that he watched porn and they watched it together so that she could see, you know, what it was he was watching, he felt shame. She couldn't understand why that did it for him. And, you know, to the caller's point there, the idea of shame and the ability to talk about it.
I was really struck by what he said, what Kyle said about we're all dependent on sexuality, you know, as human beings. And I would say that we're most dependent on intimacy in human relationships, that we're born to be in relationship and in connection. And if early in life or through our life experiences we have enough damage to our emotional selves, that we learn that it's not safe emotionally to build those kind of bonds, and yet we still need them. A lot of people will turn to kind of paper dolls as a means of satisfying that need to be connected with others. It's like eating potato. Sex addiction is like eating potato chips when you're hungry. You know, it will satisfy the need for connection, for admiration, for appreciation, but it doesn't really meet the deeper needs we have for love and nurturing.
So what is it that you say? What is it when the spouse comes in and is devastated, or the person comes in and says, I really need help? You know, battling this. I mean, what is that first step? What do you tell these patients?
Well, I think the first step is finding out what it is that they're worried about, you know, because there are people who are, let's say, have very strong religious or moral or other kinds of views around sexuality, and what they're doing isn't inherently pathological or negative or, you know, harmful. It's just that they hate themselves for it, and yet they feel driven to do it because it's what turns them on. You know, this is the gay guy who wants to be straight scenario. And so, you know, that person has things to deal with that have nothing to do with addiction. So part of my job is to assess, well, just because this person feels compelled to this behavior, they keep doing it over and over again, it's sexual in nature and they don't like it, does that mean it's an addiction? Well, no, it could be a fetish behavior. It could be an orientation issue. It could be a gender identity issue. There are lots of things about people's sexuality that they feel uncomfortable with, and yet they continue to do over and over again. Sex addiction is really, so we have to do some very clear assessment and understanding of what we're treating before we start anything. I did want to say, though, that, you know, one of the ways that I think is best to understand sexual addiction is a lot like alcoholism. You know, many, many people drink, many, many people enjoy alcohol, many, many people enjoy getting drunk occasionally, you know, at a bachelor party or, you know, watching the game or on New Year's Eve, but they don't drink to excess consistently, and they don't drink in a way that destroys their lives. And really, it's the same with recreational and non-intimate sex for the people I work with. Lots of people have affairs. Lots of people go to strip clubs. Lots of people may, you know, masturbate to porn. I mean, that's not the issue, and the porn is not the issue. It's just the fact that for some people, when they get caught up in certain patterns of behavior, they find themselves more driven to them than anything else, and they lose their lives in them. It's just a small percentage of the population. And just like the people who are alcoholic can't drink like regular people because they won't be able to stop, people who have these kinds of sexual and emotional disorders really can't have non-relational sex like with porn, because eventually they're going to run off the rails.
What then are your thoughts on what we've seen here in the last year or so of web pages like NoFap, which is a page from Reddit? This is an online challenge you can sign up for, in which you abstain from pornography or masturbation for a period of time. And the idea is to build this community of support. Is that an appropriate solution?
Well, it's not for me to judge how people decide to live their lives. And if there's a bunch of people who want to get together and avoid pornography because they feel that will improve their lives, you know, it's not my job to say that's good or bad or right or wrong. I say good for them to finding each other. I don't necessarily think that viewing lots of porn leads to addiction. I don't think that everyone who looks at porn is going to become a porn addict. I do think, however, we're in a major evolutionary and generational shift. For example, right now, we don't have a lot of research on what I would call, or what I would say is how porn and access to that kind of material is affecting what is a true digital native. In other words, someone who's grown up, someone who's really grown up with computers and pads and all that stuff in their hands,
mm-hmm.
you know, those kids are only 5 or 6 years old. So those of us who are in the middle and those of us who are at the other end, in other words, those of us who grew up with computers at 15, 17, 20, and those of us who had to adapt to them at 40, we're in a different place than younger people. We don't know how the brains of people who've been handed iPads at age 2 are going to develop by the time they're 30. We don't know that. We only know how the brains of kids who develop pretty much like ours did because they were told to go play outside when they were 2 or 5 or whatever, we know how those brains developed. So, you know, there are how this problem is going to play out over time, I don't really know. But
do you have any suspicions? Do you have suspicions?
You know, when I was growing up, you know, my parents dated in the front living room with my grandmother listening to hear if they were smooching. And when they went on dates, they went on double dates because two couples had to go together. That's what dating was in the 50s. And when I was dating by the 70s and 80s, you know, we had a very different form of sexuality in teen life than my parents did. And the thing is that, you know, my parents said, oh, my God, look at that generation. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll, they're all going to go to hell in a handbasket. And that's what I hear now. You know, I hear parents saying, oh, my God, look at all the porn kids are looking at. And, oh, my God, look at how kids are treating sexuality. And look, what's going to happen to this generation? And I just think, well, but that's what my parents said. And we turned out pretty okay. And, yeah, we have problems and we develop problems, but we solve those problems. I mean, that's part of being human is we adapt. So I see us in a big shift of the evolutionary generational wheel where there are new technologies being introduced that involve sexuality and relationship and connection. And older people find that very scary, and some of them don't understand it. And so they're backing away from it or blaming it or judging it. A lot of the stuff you read in the media about, you know, what's going to happen to the next generation with exclamation points and frowns all around them are generally written by people over 40 who don't necessarily understand what that generation is dealing with.
Rob Weiss is with us, author of the upcoming book, Closer Together, Further Apart, as we talk about pornography, viewing, and addiction, as we were talking earlier there. But Rob, I am curious about how we talk about it then. I mean, it seems like we're more comfortable as a society having that public conversation about alcoholism, for example, and you would volunteer that information more readily than you would an addiction to porn.
Well, we as a culture aren't comfortable talking about sex, period. So it isn't going to be an easy battle. I'll tell you what, though, in terms of young children being exposed to pornography and parents' concerns about that, there is only one answer to that. Well, there are two. I mean, one, you can completely cut your child off from technology, but to me that's like depriving your child of the opportunity to learn the tools of the future. So, you know, that might keep them away from porn, but I don't think it's going to help with their education toward being a productive adult. The other option is to educate them about sex. And I think that, you know, if there's one clear piece of information that comes out of all the pornography that's available online and the kids that are watching it for their parents, it's that they have to teach their children that what they're seeing is not real. You know, that the money shot and the two-second, you know, huge member and I'm off, that was three things at once, the person with outsized body parts, the person who has the perfectly, Photoshop body and they have perfect sex for 3.5 minutes and then it's done and they're both perfectly satisfied, I mean, that's not real life. And so, you know, but that may be more of what children are seeing than they are getting the information about what intimacy, relationship development, and sexuality is in a couple or in dating. And if they're not getting their information from their parents or family members, they're just going to believe what they see on the internet, which is porn.
Robert Weiss from the Sex Recovery Institute, also author of the upcoming book, Closer Together, Further Apart. I really appreciate your thoughts here this morning and your perspective this morning, Rob.
My pleasure.
More comments and discussion, as always, welcome at nprnews.org.